Welcome to PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, Vice President of Technology for the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector. So I can attest, it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world in developing and adopting new solutions to industry problems. Thanks for joining us and for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. My goal of the podcast is to outline a problem in the produce industry and then discuss several possible solutions that can be deployed today. Today's podcast is powered by our sponsor, AgriFresh. AgriFresh is a global leader and ag tech innovator in the produce industry with a mission to prevent food loss and waste and to conserve the planet's resources by providing a range of science-based solutions, data-driven technologies, and high-touch customer services. AgriFresh supports growers, packers, and retailers with solutions across the food supply chain to enhance the quality and extend the shelf life of fresh produce. With decades of experience across a range of crops, AgriFresh is powered by a comprehensive portfolio that includes proprietary solutions such as plant-based coatings, as well as a complete line of packer equipment that helps improve the freshness supply chain from harvest to home. Visit agrifresh.com to learn more. AgriFresh, we grow confidence. Today, we will hear a recording of a fireside chat I had with Nate Story, the Chief Science Officer of Plenty at the 16th Annual Canadian Summit on Food Safety 2021. At the end of the conversation, you will hear a Q&A that I think you will find interesting and was worth leaving in. We will talk about food safety at Plenty and in the CEA space. When indoor ag was first getting going years ago, many companies, not saying Plenty was one of them, positioned indoor ag as us versus them, them being outdoor growers, and that indoor was better on many dimensions, food safety being one of the big ones. Plenty and most of the other indoor companies talk now about growing the pie, that producing more fruits and vegetables in different ways is better for everyone, indoor and out. Nate talks about the problems both sectors face in transparency, technology adoption, and labor. Let's jump into this very candid discussion about food safety and technology.
My name is Nate Story, and I'm one of the co-founders at Plenty. Plenty is an indoor farming company, so we grow food indoors under artificial light. These are in big warehouses, basically. And we're able to condense a lot of production into a very small amount of space. So we got started because we felt like we needed to grow the world's capacity to grow fresh fruits and vegetables. You know, in the United States, we're incredibly blessed. We have a lot of farmland. We have a lot of agricultural capacity. Other parts of the world are not quite as fortunate. And as we start to think about a global population that's much larger than it is today, the need for fresh fruits and vegetables is only going to grow. But the capacity that we have today, you know, running full bore 100% for the next, decades, won't be able to keep up with that demand. So that's why we started Plenty, to meet that demand with this new source of supply. So, our farms are very large. They, we're growing on these vertical planes. It looks kind of like, you took a field and you stood it on its edge and put another field back to back with it. And, these are very big, very complex farms, but they're pretty awesome. They allow us to control everything. The environment's completely controlled. Our day length is controlled. Nutrients, we're able to exclude pests. We're able to collect a lot of data, in keeping with the theme of these conversations. And we're able to understand a lot about plant growth in our systems and produce a product that's really, really pretty great day in and day out. So we produce that product and we sell it. And people get the same thing every single day when they buy a Plenty product.
And what are you growing? Let people know, like, what crops are you growing now and what crops are you planning on growing in the next couple of years?
Yeah, so right now we're mostly focused on leafy greens. Most folks in the space start with leafy greens because you know they feel like an easy crop to grow. You're focusing on that primary production, and but we have been working very hard on strawberries. We've got a partnership with Driscoll's developing strawberries for indoor production. We've been working very hard on tomatoes. We've got a few other crops like raspberries and a few other things in the works. So I anticipate we're going to be taking a lot of new crops to the world over the next few years.
And how many farms do you have now?
So right now we have three farming sites. So we have basically our R&D farm. This is our advanced research facility in Laramie, Wyoming. And there we have around 50 discrete environments that we use for plant research. You know, these are relatively small production spaces, but other people call them farms. I think we'll just call the whole complex a farm site. We've got the South San Francisco farm, which is our pilot. And we're growing there in South San Francisco and distributing to a number of stores throughout the Bay Area. And we're currently in the process of building the Compton farm, which is, you know, kind of the first instance of this very, very large farm. It's also probably the smallest farm we'll ever build.
Oh, interesting. And when are you projecting that will be completed in Compton?
We'll be finishing that up towards the end of this year and bringing it online.
Yeah. Great. So this conference is about food safety. How do you think about food safety at Plenty?
Yeah, you know, food safety is something that we spend a lot of time and money and attention on. I think, you know, it's become one of these things, which is one of these top concerns for consumers. You know, when they buy product, you know, it used to be the assumption is this is a safe product. I think that that's still generally true, but you know, there's been a lot of food safety recalls. There's been a lot of kind of things in the news lately that I think have people questioning safety. And so, you know, at Plenty, this is we recognize that that's like one of the most important things that we can be focused on. I will say, you know, we've got a fundamentally different kind of problem compared to folks who are growing in uncontrolled environments. So, you know, you look at a lot of the food safety recalls of the last few years, and a lot of them, you know, had nothing to do with best practices in some instances, right? Or they're totally uncontrolled, uncontrolled things, right? You've got a wild boar that walks through a field and poops, right? Like, how do you control for that? So, you know, at Plenty, we have a very different scenario. We can't have a wild boar can't walk through our farm, right? Because it is inside of a building. It's locked. People are using key cards to get in and out of the farm. They're gowned up from head to toe. We're able to practice really, really excellent exclusion practices. So keeping pests and pathogens out altogether. So I guess all of that to say, like, you know, it's a very different problem that we have to solve compared to someone who's, say, trying to grow in the field and trying to keep wild boars out, right? So all of that to say, you know, we think a lot about prevention and risk management, sanitization, exclusion, cleanliness, like all of the components that keep our produce very, very clean. You know, human hands don't touch this stuff because we've automated many of our processes in an effort to kind of eliminate all of the potential points of contamination in the growing and processing process. You know, we practice really good traceability so that if something ever does go wrong, we know where and how. And then we've got, you know, testing and analysis that's quite aggressive. And I guess the thing that I'd say there is, you know, testing is getting a lot better. But testing and traceability go hand in hand, you know, because you don't want to be using traceability to diagnose, to try and find the source of a problem that's exposed by food your consumers are eating. You want to be testing really aggressively hand in hand with traceability so that you can catch anything before it ever occurs. And I guess the last thing I'd add is, you know, again, in keeping with this idea that we've got a very different, in some ways, a much simpler problem to solve. You know, our supply chain is not complicated. There aren't a whole lot of handoffs, right? So traceability can be hard when you've got lots and lots of handoffs, when there's a lot of, when produce is changing hands, you know, 14 times in some instances, if you're a field grower, you know, for us, we drive it directly to the distribution center or directly to the store, and it's a single handoff. So traceability for us is much simpler. It has more to do with process steps than it does to do with, you know, who had it, provenance, right? Who had it at this point in the process?
Do you think that's going to get more complicated as you get bigger and you have more farms? Is that going to become more complex, and how will you deal with that?
I mean, I think managing those farms becomes more complex, and the number of instances grows because we now have more farms. But as far as the actual process, the process itself doesn't get more complex. So if you think about it this way, if I was growing in a field and I had a farm in California and I'm managing multiple fields, but we're kind of aggregating all of that produce at the packing, at the packing stage, and then shipping it out, and it kind of changes hands half a dozen times across half a dozen different retailers and ends up, you know, in stores kind of all over the US, that's still quite complicated. Whereas with the Plenty Farms, because we're very close, generally relatively close to the distribution centers, each farm is going to be servicing certain distribution centers, certain stores. So when you look at kind of like the nodes, if you're to diagram it out, you know, the farm to distribution center to stores, you know, compared to, you know, the insane logistics problems that many of the field growers have to manage, which it's a hard, hard problem. Our problems are relatively simple. There's just not that many exchanges, right? There's not that many transactions.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are there any problems that the Plenty or anyone else that's in kind of controlled environment ag has around food safety that are different than outside? Like, are there problems that are more unique to CEA growing around food safety?
Yeah, I mean, I think if there are, they're more around process steps. But even then, I think I don't think that indoor necessarily has any more or any less problems. I think that's simplification of kind of the idea of how pathogens could get into the system. Like, everyone has to be vigilant. Everyone has to be really careful. The difference is the simplicity of the system, right? And the ability to measure. So I think if there's one thing that's probably true for indoor growers, or Plenty at least, is we tend to over-index on testing. So because we have this super tight contained facility, because we have these really really well-defined process steps, we're able to test with more frequency and more often. And, you know, like, one of the drawbacks of testing is that you learn things, right? And you actually have to do something with that data. And so, I think the reality is, like, we just have a much more granular view of, say, the microbiology of the system. And even in systems that are super sterile, there's always a microbiome. Right. Like, no matter what, you know, germ theory, everything is everywhere, right? And the reality is that no matter where you go, no matter what kind of a system you're working with, there will always be a microbiology. So we just need to make sure it's the right microbiology. You know, is it safe? Is it a good microbiology? And so all of that to say, you know, I think, you know, for a lot of field growers, the testing equipment just doesn't exist to engage in the kind of testing that we can engage in a controlled facility with a lab on site, right? Like, it's different. It's a different scenario. And I think that lack of information in the field is both represents a risk in terms of, not necessarily always knowing what is in or on your product. It also mitigates the risk of knowing and having to respond to it, right? In ways that we just don't have enough historical data to understand how we balance our reaction to some of these things in the field. So oftentimes, you know, we end up with these scenarios where it lands on a shelf and someone gets sick, and then they do a bunch of testing, and then we've got a big recall on our hands. And that's definitely worse in the long run than testing in the field. and understanding, you know, what's going on and just holding stuff back. So
what did you have to do? Like, I hadn't even thought of this, that because your ability to constantly test, and you're able to see things at a much lower level and to follow them through, what did you have to learn? And was there anybody else doing that research, or did you just have to build this whole body of research yourself of really understanding what's, you know, we've never seen this pathogen or this microorganism. It's not necessarily a pathogen, maybe a pathogen to the plant, but, you know, just that whole body of knowledge probably didn't exist before you started looking, right?
Yeah, I mean, so people have been doing research on, you know, the microbiology of hydroponic systems for a while. That being said, you know, every little ecosystem is different. You know, no two are alike. They can be the exact same system side by side, and they might have a slightly different microbiology. So, you know, some existed, and it was helpful in a very broad sense, and unhelpful in a narrow sense. So, you know, there's just a lot that we have to learn about our farms, right? How they behave, how they work, and you know, they're very safe. You know, they're very safe in terms of, you know, the microbiology that we have. They tend to be, you know, closer to the sterile end of the spectrum than the super diverse end of the spectrum. And, you know, that's frankly the way we want it. You know, we clean the floors, we sterilize the equipment, we, you know, between harvests, right? Like we're sterilizing everything. So that's how we want it. That's not necessarily to say that it's a good or a bad thing. That's just the management that we approach that we've taken, and learning how that impacts food safety, learning how that impacts the microbiology of the system has been quite the learning process for us. But it is, we are fortunate to have a system that allows us to collect data constantly, test constantly, and really keep tabs on the system microbiology, as opposed to kind of more of the black box approach that frankly we're stuck with in a lot of other production systems.
And you have everything all in one place too, which has got to be a big advantage. So you're growing, and any processing, any packaging, anything, you know, it's not moving across town, or it doesn't have to go through a bunch of different steps. And so that control has got to be a huge advantage from a food safety point of view as well.
Yeah, I mean, again, just going back to this concept of simplification, right? It's like when you simplify the problem, there's only, say, two transactions rather than 15 transactions, the number of places where something can go wrong, or the number of points where there can be contamination, or the number of processes to audit, or what have you, right? It's just a fraction. It's a fraction of what it is otherwise. So we just have a simpler problem.
Yeah. So moving, you've talked a little bit about traceability. So let's move a little bit about traceability and data. So how can traceability and enhanced data transparency make the CEA sector more responsive to food safety concerns?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think the thing to point out about traceability is, you know, traceability is typically used to try and understand where a problem happened after the fact, right? It's kind of like the police, right? They show up after the crime has been committed. If you're the person getting robbed, the cops aren't that helpful in that moment, right? And so traceability is kind of the same way. You know, usually something has happened, and you know, we've got a recall, we've got something on our hands, and we've got to go back and figure out in the produce industry, right? So at Plenty, we've kind of taken a little bit of a different approach, and we've said, you know, traceability is very helpful in terms of food safety, yes, and always managing our food safety. But it's also very helpful at managing our system and our system efficiency. So for us, traceability is as much about system efficiency and material management as it is about human health and safety. And, you know, I think the thing to point out there is in most systems, traceability, again, is kind of something that's helpful generally after the fact. At Plenty, because we're able to pair it with this testing, right? Constant testing, just constant testing. it becomes a tool for really rapid diagnoses. If we see something that's, you know, weird or off, or if we see a shift in system microbiology, or if we see ATP counts go up somewhere, right? So we basically have a unique opportunity to leverage traceability. And the other thing that I'd say is, you know, we've simplified the traceability problem at Plenty with our architecture, right? So it's not like we're coming into an existing system that's already complex and trying to bring a traceability system to try and understand the super complicated thing. We basically just said, hey, what's the more simple form, right? How do we get to a more simple form? And that doesn't make traceability obsolete per se, but it does make it maybe a little less critical to understanding the system, right? Because the system is just more understandable. It is simple. Mm-hmm. There's only a couple of transactions there. So, I mean, I guess, you know, that's how I would describe, you know, our approach to traceability. Consumers want honesty. Consumers want transparency. Consumers want to know that their food is safe. And, you know, I think we've used labels for a very long time to try and communicate those things. But I see a world in the future where consumers want to be able to scan a barcode and see how the product was grown, scan a barcode and see who grew it, where it was grown, how it was handed off, whether or not it was cold chain compliant or not. You know, like I see a future where people will want to be able to take more of a firsthand, approach to auditing the food that they eat. I don't think that's everyone, but I think that's an occasional thing that people want, you know. And in a world where we're moving towards more transparency, I'd bet on it rather than bet against it. So regardless of the system that folks are using to produce, you know, traceability is something they should be investing in. I will also say, you know, the fact that we have some of the food safety incidents on the rise, I think, in my opinion, indicates we need to invest in more testing as well. So in the same vein as like pairing testing and traceability, you know, for field producers, that's something that we need is rapid, modular testing.
Mm-hmm. So we've been in a huge time of disruption with COVID and then some regulatory changes. How can data make the CEA sector more resilient in these times of disruption?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a lot of things that we can learn from like the last year and a half as it relates to resiliency and the food supply system. Some of those things have to do with things like traceability and data, knowing what is where, right? There were all sorts of logistics breakdowns the last year. And a lot of that is a data problem. A lot of that was a labor problem, right? In some places, we just didn't have the people. So investing in more autonomous systems or systems that can basically function in the absence of human supervisors, that's important. And then location, you know, so at Plenty, you know, our goal has been to kind of solve these by putting farms close to distribution centers, minimizing the amount of labor, minimizing the amount of complexity that can interfere with us growing the product and then handing it directly off to the retailer. And then they hand it off directly to the consumer. Like that's the simplest possible process, right? And so, you know, when we think about resilient food systems, I think it's important to think about simple food systems.
Mm-hmm.
How do we just make these super complex things a little bit less complicated and reduce the number of dependencies in the system? So if we're dependent on constant labor prices and constant labor supply, that's probably that's not a good bet, looking forward. The other thing, you know, I think really changed was, you know, consumers started to think about their health and they started to think about their safety. And maybe they're thinking about it through the lens of COVID, but I think that it's going to transfer to the things that people choose to put in their bodies, right? To the food that they eat. And, you know, as people moved home, we saw it in our sales, like our sales went through the roof, right? As people started staying home, they started cooking for themselves. They started investing in healthy food. And I think, you know, traceability, understanding what they're eating, who grew it, where it came from, is an important part of that decision-making process for some folks. And certainly the folks that are the advocates, right? The folks that are quite vocal and the folks that are really involved with promoting fresh fruits and vegetables, fresh, healthy food. So so I think, you know, consumer behavior is kind of another thing to consider here. And the speed of change in that behavior, you know, a lot of things happened overnight with COVID. And I think we need to get used to kind of consumer demands for change, consumer demands for things being something that we have to respond to. So when we think about data systems and how flexible they are, responsive they are, how we're able to audit, you know, where something was and who was touching it and who handed it off, you know, that's another thing to keep in mind looking forward. So all of that to say, that's kind of just like a long ramble there. You know, like we have this tendency as humans to engage in this additive improvement, right? So we're like, oh, we've got to figure out how to make the system safer. Let's add things to it. And what that results in is a super complex system. And it gets to the point where we just kind of hold out this hope, oh, machine learning, AI is going to come in and solve this problem for us. Right? It's too complicated for humans now. And maybe the question should be, does it need to be too complicated for humans, right? At its core, do we really need to make this thing so complex that we need insanely complex computer programs to actually help us understand it? And I think the answer at Plenty is no. As we start to think about how we grow the world's capacity to grow fresh fruits and vegetables, I think we can grow that capacity with a simpler system, with a system that empowers producers, empowers consumers, and really makes this something that is understandable.
Yeah, those are a bunch of different great points. I think certainly around consumers, it's very important. And we, you know, at PMA, we've seen a lot of changes in consumers and how they want to get their food and how they think about their food. And I know for myself personally, in the beginning of COVID, where, you know, we went to the grocery store a lot less frequently, just the decision of what do you buy, because I'm not coming back for 10 more days. And so those types of behaviors and looking at how long will this lettuce last in my refrigerator, or how long will the strawberry last in my refrigerator. And so I think those types of changes in behavior and people wanting to buy online and have it delivered, we saw an ability to really be able to react to those types of things. And I think that made for a lot more resilience. And at the same time, a lot of consumers really got to see what does our supply chain look like, you know, when there was people plowing onions back into the field because they couldn't go to food service, or milk being dumped. I think that really highlighted to a lot of consumers, you know, what our supply chain looks like and how important it is on food.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're all really kind of, you know, in the hands of these complicated logistics, right? And you know, anyone could producer could be the victim.
Yeah.
Any group of consumers could be the victim, right, of inefficiencies that jump out.
So. Yeah. So what technology do you see still needs to be developed to decrease the number of food safety recalls in produce? And this can be indoor or outdoor grown. Just what do you think we should be working on, you know, from a technology point of view to solve this better?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, there's probably three things that matter the most. And, you know, I harp on this with my teams a lot, right? You have to make something easier, people won't do it. You have to make it easier, people will take shortcuts and do it wrong, or they'll figure out some way to cheat the system to make it easier. So, you know, human beings are always optimizing for, you know, conservation of energy. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, number one is testing, and I'm still amazed at the lack of really effective testing for pathogens that exists. So, you know,
on-site type testing.
On-site, that's yeah. Right, in the field. So starting in the field, right, it's like, again, traceability is fine. Traceability is great, but it just tells you what is. And it usually after the fact. And so, or it tells you where something was. It doesn't necessarily tell you the state of the product at that position in the supply chain. So, you know, when we think about, you know, the fundamental problem here, it's like no one knows whether there's pathogens on the product or not until kind of late in the game. And so, you know, with if we had modular testing that could go to the field, that could be very effective, you know, that would be awesome. We at Plenty, we've got the advantage of we've got a lab on site, right? Like we have the lab in the field, if you will. And I think, you know, for us that's awesome. It means we can do that rapid testing. It means that we can understand what is true, you know, and we can walk anywhere in the farm and tell you what the state of that product is. But for the field, you know, which needs to keep producing to meet demand, testing is so, so important. And there just aren't any great solutions today that are rapid, modular, and really effective. And then, you know, second on traceability, like this is just a super simple thing, but, you know, automated data entry. Just, you know, figure out ways to make data entry automated, fast, effective, easy for people. And the folks, especially who are in the field, you know, that's the last thing that they want to think about. Make it easy. So, you know, this is technology that already exists, RFID tags, barcodes, the systems around managing and tracking things. And then I think lastly, you know, integrated data systems. So getting people to share their data and building data systems that transfer, you know, the folks before we're talking about blockchain, but, you know, these ways of you know, understanding where something came from in a way that's integrated retailers, producers, everyone.
So these aren't Nobel Prize level technology discoveries. These are mostly adoption and just paying attention to putting solutions together that people can use, right?
These are not sexy.
Yeah, that's the area that people don't want to invest in, I'm afraid. But Well, I think we have some questions from the audience, right? Beth, were you going to
ask
those? Yeah, okay.
We do. So the first question comes in from Sean Moore, who asked, what forms of technology does Plenty use today?
Oh, that's a really big question. I mean, we're a technology company, and so there are a lot of technologies that we use that we don't work on. So think industrial robots, industrial controls, that kind of thing. There's a lot of technology that we've developed because it's either something the market didn't provide or couldn't provide for our specific application. So these are things like, you know, I would say our growing technology, vertical towers and the conveyance systems and kind of just the way that we manage things, the architecture itself of the farm. We have, you know, lighting systems that we've designed, HVAC systems, air management, environmental management systems. We have, you know, nutrient and fluids control systems. Then we have kind of genetics, which I consider technology. You know, proprietary genetics that we've paired to match with those environmental technologies. And then on top of genetics, you know, there's a classic GEM, right? We've layered all of these management technologies that we've developed in order to help make sure that that match of genetics and environment is perfect. So PharmOS, sensor and sensing systems, you know, we're using machine learning and AI in some instances, you know, data management, storage, data pipeline, and that kind of thing. So, you know, everything from the hardware to the software, and then the plant software of genetics.
That's a lot. keeps everything moving, that's for sure. Another question came in. How often do you use pesticides in CEA? Is it needs-based only or preventive as well?
Yeah, Plenty, we don't use pesticides on our crops. Again, you know, just kind of going back to this concept of simplicity. I know that's not true for all producers, but for Plenty it is. You know, going back to this concept of simplicity, right? If you can keep the pests out of the farm, then, you know, then you have a much lessened likelihood of having to use pesticides, right? And then if you go like we do, our production cycle is all of about 12 days. And so, you know, there are very few pests and pathogens that can keep up with those types of, you know, we just outstrip the life cycle of most of our insect pests. You know, we don't have weeds. So all we're left with is like fungal and bacterial pathogens. And those we control with air filtration and fluids filtration, right? And so kind of we can manage all of the different risks to our crops with means other than pesticides or insecticides.
Awesome. Thank you. Next question is, are you having a challenge finding enough of the right people to fill the roles at Plenty? Are you partnering with any university programs to ensure the skills needed in the future to allow other companies to get on the indoor farming bandwagoner idea concept here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer to that is yes. And I think, you know, there are a lot of young, talented, amazing people that are lined up to kind of work at these places. You know, the job market right now is particularly tough. So yeah, I mean, could always use more. I'd say that the place where we've historically really struggled is to bring in really great mature growers who've had experiences in kind of traditional industry. You know, the reality is ag tech is tough because you have agricultural problems, and you have this partner in a much more conservative established industry. And so getting good growers through the door who can come in and have an open mind and like engage with you on new technology is a pretty tough thing. Most growers tend to be more conservative in their outlook and their approach on technology, and getting their engagement has been hard. But we're slowly getting there as people start to realize we're a real thing and we're going to be around for a while. We're getting a little bit more of a response.
I was going to ask you if it's changing over time and you're seeing more of a understanding and acceptance of new ways.
It is. It's slowly getting there. We just keep putting out this message. You know, it's like we're not here to replace the field. We're here to build agricultural capacity on top of the field. You know, everyone has to produce. There's no one in the world who can slack off here for the next 50, 60 years. You know, the population of this planet, the rising middle class, none of those things allows anyone to take a break. So there's good job security in ag moving forward. And I think as people start to realize this isn't like a competitive thing where we're going into to take out the field growers and we're not competing. As people start to realize that, they realize, oh, well, maybe there's an opportunity here for more collaboration. Maybe we can share people and share ideas and do better together. So we're getting there.
One question that comes to my mind too is, domestically versus internationally. So is there more or less interest in, particularly in the EU or in other countries? What's the difference that you might be seeing relative to interest in domestically versus internationally?
Yeah, I mean, there are massive differences, some of which are cultural, some of which are kind of societal. Some of which have, you know, are a direct result of like the pattern of development in that area. So, you know, when we look across the world, there's interest from everywhere, right? Like the reality is that, the world's supply of fresh fruits and vegetables can't keep up with demand. That is a fact. And people are not consuming enough fresh fruits and vegetables. And so when we think about what we have to do, we've got to triple the current supply of fresh fruits and vegetables in order to meet that need. How are we going to do that, right? And I think everyone's wrapping their heads around that. Obviously, some places in the world are way ahead of us, where we have plenty of agricultural capacity. You know, you go to Saudi Arabia, you go to Shanghai, China, you go to, Singapore, and they're thinking about food security constantly because they don't have our capacity. And so for them, this is like a no-brainer, right? It just makes perfect sense. And so I think, there are areas of the world that are going to adopt this very, very quickly. And there are going to be areas of the world that are slower simply because there's less pressure on them from a supply standpoint.
I think what we're going to see moving forward is a blurring of the lines between indoor and outdoor. We are already seeing partnerships, like Plenty and Driscoll's, for example, between outdoor companies and indoor companies. They are both ways to produce food with their own sets of benefits and challenges, which vary by growing regions and crop. We will see growers produce food in ways that are best for them in terms of labor, water, availability, and markets. That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all our episodes at pma.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions of what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe, eat your fruits and vegetables, and we will see you next time.